First Peter 4, 10 to 11. Each one should use whatever gifts he has received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, they should do as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen. Looking forward to hearing you share, Don and Judy.
Thank you for this opportunity to share. We just wanted to say why we went back. And also we have three themes kind of through this. One is our experience with our children for several weeks. The other one is how we served, what we did. And the third one is what we received. So Don's going to talk a little bit about why we went back and about our experiences with our children. So,
and we will try to let each person finish their sentence. When you've lived with someone for quite a few years, you start a sentence and then they finish it. Anyway, yes, we were blessed to be able to return to Tanzania. I'd gone in 1970 for my alternate service. Judy came after she graduated from college, and we were married in July of 71. Returned at the end of 72, and this was our fourth time back. We'd spent time there with all of our children in the past. However, our two oldest were rather young when we were there, and after retirement, we decided we wanted to go back and spend some time as volunteering, not just going as tourists. But then our children changed that. They decided they wanted to go along because the two older ones didn't remember much of what had happened when they were there the first time. Amanda had been there 11 years ago and did her cross-cultural at the Shirati Hospital. So this time we decided to be tourists for a little while, and we started.
Could you turn the lights down a little bit so that we can see?
So we can see the stuff on the wall a little better.
And children, when you see an animal, if you want to call out what it is, you may.
Does anyone know what these animals are?
Zebras.
So yeah, and it was very blessed to be able to go with our three adult children and relate to them as adults, which is something we had never had the opportunity to do before. And then also for the children to be able to relate to each other as adults. It was really neat. So yeah, when we were blessed to see some animals as we went through the parks. Can you see this? I can see it real good here, but I...
Yeah, I think this light's really kind of glaring in our face. I don't know if you... Anyway, we had the pleasure of having the same guide that we had in 2005 with Amanda. He was so good. He knew all his animals and birds. He knows how creation works together. I'm positive he's a Christian.
Yes, he is.
And he's just such a joy to be with. But he just took us... We just had... saw amazing sights. What are these? Children? What do you see in the trees? No. Lions. Tree lions. We saw some tree lions. They climb up in the lowest branches of the trees.
And it's rather unusual to see them in the trees.
What's that? What animal? Giraffe.
Elephants.
It was very dry when we were there, and so the animals were congregating around the water holes. We did get to see a lion kill from start to finish. Yes, great. And those are the children that we took the trip with. um, I forgot to look at the clock. Okay. So while the children were still with us, we got to go back to Bukharova, where we were married, and I'll let Don tell about that.
And where we lived, this was a water house where there used to be water. There's no water there right now. The place isn't in the best of repairs. However, they are working to get it back in shape. The theological college has reopened, and the church, the Mennonite church, is transferring their headquarters from Musoma town back to Bukharova, where the mission station or the headquarters used to be.
So there was the Bible school, there was the domestic science school, there was a printing press. So I worked part-time in a printing press and Bible school when we lived there. That little building behind the pump house was our little mud brick house, and now it's one-third demolished by termites. But it was very dry and sad to see the disrepair. Then the children left, and we stayed at Sharati. They were there a couple of days and got to see and get to know some of the people.
This is Dr. Glenn Brubaker in the solar house. All those are batteries, and which supply, it's a solar system which supplies electricity to the hospital. Electric off the grid was very sporadic. This way they can charge up the batteries when there's sun, and you can alternate between solar and also power off the grid. When using solar, you're able to use or save a significant amount of money.
And you already heard about the solar water project last year that Dr. Glenn had gone over to work on the electric project. The batteries didn't come, so he was like, what should I do? And then the opportunity came up to do the water project, where they got water from the lake almost 2 miles away. So they now have a constant supply of water, which the hospital did not have since it opened in 1935, if you can imagine, create a hospital without constant water and electricity.
And that's, you know, okay, this is a water station which I helped, designed and had made. There are four water stations where people can come and purchase water at a very affordable price. They don't have to go that 2 mile down to the lake on their bicycles. There's yellow containers. You can get five of them on a bicycle. And so they fill their water containers, take them to people who buy water from them, and then there's people come privately also. So they were very happy to have shade. Before they had these little huts or whatever you call it, they would just sit out in the sun.
They're the ones who collected the fees for the water.
And that's Florian on the left. He's a Swiss volunteer. He's an IT person. And the one on the right is Dr. Chirangi. And when I was following Dr. Brubaker and Florian around, those guys are so intelligent and with computers and figuring stuff out. I did help tear down a washing machine that had been broken for quite a while. Unfortunately, we were not able to get the parts while I was still there, but Florian had taken pictures when we were tearing it apart, and he went online and found out all this information, so he was able to get it back together, and they now had two functioning washing machines. Before, they were only using one.
And it took a little while for me to be able to plug in. I finally met Dr. Trongi's wife, Violet, near the end of the second week. And I had been praying, Lord, please give me something to do. Well, the first assignment I got was to write a final report for GLRA, which is a German Leprosy Relief Association. It's an international NGO. And they had a whole page of what they required in this final report. And to say the least, I was floored because I've never done anything like that before. I didn't know anything of the history of the leprosy program there. I'm just going to read two of the eight things they required in this report just to let you know why I was feeling way over my head. The fourth thing that they were asking for was the general comparison of planned versus actual activities and outputs. How had project objectives and impacts been obtained? Summarize the project status slash situation and indicate relevant delays, challenges, and problems. What would you do differently? Lessons learned. Highlight overall achievements as well as those showing in particular the impact of GLRA's project slash inputs, impact and achieved. Mention success stories and lessons learned concerning target beneficiaries, implementing partner, implementation strategy and approach, and the underlying assumptions. So I was like, okay, God, I asked for something to do, but does it have to be over my head? But Violet and I work very closely. This is Violet, a very sweet, intelligent woman with lots of ambitions for the women and the hospital, and the, especially the leprosarium. And she gave me a crash course in what, the history. She wasn't able to work with me all the time, so I did a lot of interviews. She took me through the leprosy compound. We met a lot of the people that lived there. And I'm just going to do a real quick summary of what the program had been doing. So they were funding a project already started by Sharati Hospital's leprosy section. They were trying to rehabilitate leprosy patients who could go back to their villages, educate those villages on leprosy, and reduce the stigma, and also help them not to have further injuries by educating them, helping them get treatment when they needed. But there's a group of people, older ones, that are living there permanently at Sharati, who have serious injuries, they were shipped out of their villages because of stigma, and they're older. Some of them haven't been visited by family for 40 years. So they need to be housed and fed. And that's one of the areas where this German leprosy fund was going to stop funding those people there. So Violet was very anyway, we did get a 6-page report done in the 9 days that we had to do it. And but she talked to me about her concern about these people. What are we going to feed them when this money dries up? I can't let them starve. And so we had been given some money by previous people who attended here right before we left, and they said, if you see a need, use this money. So we talked about it, and we decided it should go for food for that old folks camp, which is what they called it. And that's the three of us. So we went with Violet and went to the local market, bought a bunch of food. You want to talk about that?
We went out on the way there. We bought a goat. We bought the goat along the road. You know, being Mennonite, you save money where you can. And if you buy a goat along the road, you don't have to pay commission when it gets inside to the market. And we bought, I guess, about 200 pounds of rice, sugar, beans, watermelon, bananas, sugar.
Tomatoes,
cabbage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it helped fill their larder of food, and then they killed the goat, and we had a feast and invited people who had been working in the surrounding area, and also to it was a celebration of the fact that the house here, the campus, whatever you call it, we used to call it leprosarium, but it's a leprosy.
The old folks
camp.
We all
call it the old folks camp.
That's what they call it.
Turned the electric on, solar-powered electric that day. I'd help Glenn run the electric line over to the old folks' house. So they had electric, and they had solar electric, and they had food.
So they were really happy about this feast and that all these people came. This is Dr. Tarangi and Dr. Glenn Brubaker. If it wouldn't have been for Glenn Brubaker and the Friends of Sharati group here in the States, those major projects would not have happened with the water and the electricity. Okay.
Another thing that happened while we were there, they built a fence around the community. Prior to the fence, people would just run their cattle and goats and sheep through there to eat what little grass or whatever greens were there, so they could not have gardens. Now that the fence surrounds the community, they can have gardens. And that, we got this from Violet last week. They, you know, this is what they're doing now. They have water to water it when they did have some good rains, but now they have gardens that they can grow produce and eat.
She said they're now eating vegetables 4 days a week. And as these vegetables grow, they'll be able to eat enough and hopefully have some to sell for income for them. These are some of our friends from the leprosy compound. This is Chow Siku. She has a prosthesis, but she can work in the garden. She's always cheerful. She's one of only two women there. And I didn't catch everybody's names, but we visited often, and this man with the amputation made sisal rope. That's what he's doing right there. And also the mats.
He made hot pads.
Hot pads.
And this is a guy who sits inside the gate, you know, listening to his radio and listening to news. And he's a very jovial, fun man to be around. And he's the one soon after we first got there, he said, what is your name? And I said, Donald. And he said, oh, Trump. and he would talk politics. And
you can see he has, his feet are bandaged because he has injury, like he has wounds right now that have to be treated. Behind him are Violet in a white dress and Baraka, who worked in the office with Violet and me too. They're both very involved in the leprosy compound.
And he also was a driver.
Yeah. This is another patient or person there who has an amputation. He's deaf, so he kind of uses his own sign language, which I didn't understand, but Violet did. So he hops around with one leg and two canes.
And this was a side trip out to the village where I used to live.
Trani?
Yeah, Trani. Back then it was an Ujamaa village, a communal village. I went there in 1970, and roads have changed. The whole dynamics of the place has changed. It was wilderness when we lived there, and now there's houses all around and many, many more people. So we just kept asking. We just to stop every once in a while and say, where's Trani? And it's up there, it's up there. And finally we ended up in what they said was Trani Center. The center of this little town. And they said, who are you looking for? And we said, Chachameti. And the one gentleman was there. He said, well, I'll show you where he lived. So he got into the car. We get up there, and all these people started coming around, and I was asking names of people who used to live there. And they'd say, oh, yeah, he lived over there. He lived there. And then I mentioned Kazimoto, who was a very dynamic person there back in the day, and he said, well, he was my father. So we ended up...
So the man in the gold shirt there to Don's left is the one that we picked up at Trani Center, who that was a God moment. You know, he was the son of Kazimoto. He knew where the village was.
And you see there's plastic containers. They didn't have chairs for us to sit on, so they brought these plastic things out there.
And Manine is the person with the cane. Now, he and his wife, Ellen, are the ones we rented from a little house. They provided all our food. We ate all our food with them. He's a very wise man. He and his wife have both been involved tremendously in the church, and she was also involved in the leprosy program for many years. Became dear friends of ours, and he took us out.
He is a man of wisdom, and there's an older lady there, and he said, we need to get her some sugar and some tea.
Oh, corn. Corn cobs. That's corn, and the empty cobs are down at the feet. Dried corn.
It's up there drying, and yeah, that way the animals and stuff can't get to it. Anyway, he said, we need to get her some tea, so we sent the driver down to the village to get some sugar and tea, and he said, give it to the lady, not the man, because if you give it to a man, he'll take it home to his village, but if you give it to the lady, she'll keep it there, and the old lady will get some tea. This is looking out over the village, over the valley from where we used to live, very fertile, black cotton soil, and it's it's just being farmed. A lot of outsiders have come in and are farming there now, much to the chagrin of some of the people who have been there for years.
You can't see it, but in the very center, way down there, is a man plowing with an old plow and oxen.
And the woman, the older woman there is...
To your right.
To my right, yeah. It's the wife of Chachameti. She was the only person still there from when I was there. And she was his second wife. She was younger. And so when we showed up, they went off to find her, and she had to come, and she was so happy to see us. And before we left, she had them catch a chicken so we could bring a chicken back and have a chicken meal the next day. But they were very happy to see us.
And they didn't know we were coming. We came unannounced. And the hospitality was amazing.
And then...
This is the relationship. This is in addition to the relationship part. You've already heard about some relationships. But this is a special story about a relationship.
Being there in 1970 versus now, it's quite a time gap. And... people would say, oh, you know Swahili. Where did you learn Swahili? I said, I lived here. And they said, when? 1970. Well, I wasn't born yet. Anyway, most of the people we knew aren't there anymore. But I asked soon after we were there if Marco Kisigito was still alive. And they said, yes, he's 80 years old, but he's very healthy. And he lives out in Mugumu, which is right on the edge of the Serengeti. And he was a hunter. He was a pastor. He was a man of God. And when we would go out there, we would like to hunt. And the Bishop Kisadi was liked animals in the wilderness, the wilderness and the animals, and he liked to hunt too. So we'd go out and we'd hook up with Marco, and we had quite a few hunting experiences. So I asked if we could get to Mugumu, and the secretary of the hospital, Agutu, says, yes, we'll get a vehicle and we'll go. But I said, if we go, I want to find Mark. And this younger generation didn't know him. Anyway, Dr. Chidangi's brother lived out there, and they asked, and if they found Mark. And so, you know, we show up there, and with cell phones, they told him we were there and we were coming. And then we get there, and I see this tall man coming across, and I said, Marco. He said, Tom. Anyway, Agutu wanted to see the hospital because it was Mugumo's sister hospital to Shirati. So Marco had been there from the start, helping build and everything. So he showed us through the hospital. After that, we went to he wanted us to come to his village and meet his wife. We had had food, so Agutu said, we can come, but just for tea, no food. So we get there, and he drove out with us, and, when we got there, he took my hand and he said, Donald, I still love the Lord. He was a pastor. His son was killed by lightning. His wife was older. Sons are very important. So he took another wife. And as a result, he left the church. And I remember Bishop Kisadi was here probably mid to late 80s, and he told me Mark left the church, and he told me the story, and I remember saying, he will come back. So, he's back. He attends church, smaller church there. His wife sings in the choir. His son sings in the choir. So we had a pleasant time reminiscing. He remembered that I shot left-handed. He remembered that when he would come into Bukaroba, and he needed a meal. If Judy wasn't there, I would cook for him. Mm-hmm. So then, we visited. He went to show us the grave of his first wife, who had died in 2006, the church where they go, and then we said goodbye. And I thought that was goodbye. However, next morning we're in church. Here he comes at the Mugumu Mennonite Church. Here he comes in and sits down, worships with us, participated in the service. And after the sermon, they recognized him and allowed him to get up and give his testimony.
That's the last one.
That's the last one. Okay. And then, as we were leaving, Agutu, who is the administrator of the Shirati Hospital, he's also a pastor, he said, that was powerful. He said, it's obvious he loves the Lord. It's obvious you guys were friends. He said, we as a church need to offer forgiveness to some of these people who may have strayed and welcome them back.
So, yeah, it's really hard to put 2 months into 20, 30 minutes. But it was just, it was amazing to see how God worked from the planning of it, our children getting to come along, the relationships that we built. There were a few people we were able to renew relationships with, but it was just, there weren't as many distractions. And over there, it's just, you don't set out, I'm going to get this and this and this accomplished today. You start with a plan, but you'd be flexible and work with whatever happens. But taking the time to just be with the people, they blessed us way more than we blessed them. So thank you for the chance. And also thanks to the family members who let their husbands or wife come with us for 2 weeks. That was a real gift. So thank you.